Blog Talk Radio.
I love irony and contrast. Seas would rise when I gave the word. Do you get a sense of power there? Welcome, everyone. Greg Masters here for This Week in Health Innovation, joined as always in the booth. The virtual booth today is my colleague, partner, and inspiration for this series, Dr. Pat Salver. Pat, can you hear us?
I sure can, and I'm really excited about today's program.
Yeah, me too. I'm kind of excited. So we were just, shall we say, kibitzing a little bit before we went on the air and our guest joined us. We're going to talk today about a company called Health Fidelity, and we're going to speak with its CEO, Dr. Dan Riskin. And let me tell you very briefly that Dan is a board-certified surgeon and, as Fort mentioned, CEO of Health Fidelity. And Health Fidelity is a leading healthcare big data company, and their product is called Reveal, which is a breakthrough clinical NLP platform built around the world's most accurate, reliable, and studied NLP technology. It enables real-time extraction, normalization, structuring, and coding of unstructured information for a multitude of healthcare applications such as quality measurement and analytics, electronic health record, decision support, clinical decision support, medical transcription, and revenue cycle management. Now, that's a boatload, but let me just say before we hear more from the principal in the conversation today that when I first saw the site and we were kicking this one around, some people associate NLP with natural language processing, but others of us from the behavioral sciences and psychosocial world, and we see that we sometimes think of neuro-linguistic programming. So, Pat, we were chatting. Is there a problem with acronyms in healthcare?
Is there a problem with acronyms in healthcare? There is a huge problem with acronyms in healthcare. Maybe Dan will shed some light on how he's handling that as he's taking unstructured data and translating it. But I think there's an even bigger problem when you look at health technology, because that's where the acronyms really go crazy. So that being said, Dan, I thought we might start out by doing a little translation here, and NLP is where I thought we would start. Help us understand exactly what is natural language processing.
Sure. So natural language processing is a portion of understanding clinical information. And when I think about all of the information that exists in healthcare, often referred to as big data, I'm shocked at how much information is there about the patient, about the care system, that just isn't being used. We started working on this many years ago, back when the policies were being created to say we should be using this information. And to do that, you need to understand it. So whether it's understanding all the information... Of course. So a patient comes in...
Examples of what's not being used currently.
Of course. So right now, you have a huge amount of data in the electronic health record that patients may experience coming into the doctor, and the doctor types in this information about the patient. That sits there in the record and is used by the next doctor, but is not actually used by the overall system to improve care. If you consider the information in there, there's actually data on what was done to the patient, whether it worked out well. If you put that together at a population level, you can figure out whether a certain intervention works well or doesn't. If you put it together in a big picture level for the patients in a facility, you can figure out whether care is appropriate or not. You can assume that in any given facility, parts of the interventions that are done are inappropriate. Sometimes an operation isn't appropriate, sometimes a medication. Finding these details, finding these needles in the haystack and fixing the systems is the only way over time to reduce costs and improve the quality of care.
And so how do you do that? I'm a physician as well, and I'm an emergency physician. I've written my note, how do you take that note? I know coders translate it into code so that I can get paid, but how do you take my note and translate it into what you're talking about, something that can shed more light on what works and what doesn't work in healthcare?
Sure. This is all about layers of extracting information, making it usable, and analyzing. And no one really likes to talk about the details of the healthcare system. People just want it to work. But the fact is, to improve it, you need to understand what's going on. So if a coder takes a given note, a given encounter, and codes two different items, they might describe an entire patient as being hypertensive and diabetic. The fact is that patient has 100 other issues going on. Every person does. And what we can do is pull out the pertinent issues that the doctor wrote in, that the nurse wrote in, that are put into the electronic health system or the laboratory system through all these different evaluations of the patient. We can pull them out, put them together as a patient map, describe the patient very clearly, and allow the computer system downstream to actually use that information. It hasn't been done before in healthcare, but it's been done for about 15, 20 years in information technology. We're just very slow in porting this knowledge over to the healthcare industry.
Well, so that being said, how close are you now with Reveal to being able to make what you're hoping for real?
It's exciting. This is an exciting time for healthcare. Our team has been working on this technology for 20 years. We have what we believe is the leading technology in the industry, and we're just now seeing the ability to create a very clear patient map. This patient is a certain age with certain health problems and certain things going well and has had specific procedures. And it's fascinating. Every day we watch individual patient information and population information teach us something, whether it's teaching us that a given medication isn't working or there's a surprise in certain side effects or a population is being undertreated in a given area or treated poorly for a given disease. It's shocking that every day now we're learning. Now, I actually believe that we're years away from really implementing that at a broad level in healthcare. Right now we're working with large health systems, the leading health systems in the country, to implement it, and we work hand in hand. But my hope is that over time, we'll be able to expand this to the broader population of hospitals, health systems, and the outpatient areas where patients receive care.
Yeah, very interesting. And I have another question, and then I want to talk to you personally about your journey from surgery to NLP. But before we do that, I want to ask you, are you familiar with the blue button?
Sure.
So I'm involved right now in a project where people are using Blue Button Plus technology to be able to move data from Blue Button compliant repositories like EHRs and Health Vault and so forth into cool apps, so they can take that data and make it, you know, translate it into meaningful, actionable information for patients. And but right now, you know, the data is kind of that typical data that you get, leaving the whatever 60%, 70%, 80% of the information still in the note and not being transferable. Are you thinking that what you're doing here with Reveal will ultimately allow consumers to have all that stuff? And if so, talk a little bit about the power of me as a, not as a doctor, but as a patient, having access to all that.
Yeah, we would certainly like that to happen. We've been very impressed with the Blue Button program and several other programs that have been all about pulling the information out, making it usable in applications to patients, to doctors. We think that's a critical part of improving healthcare. We need that innovation happening and expanding innovation to the entire population of consumers is very powerful. I think that in healthcare, first leading applications need to prove themselves in the in the main healthcare system, in the hospitals, in the areas where the doctors are actually studying what works. And I think we've done that over the last 5 or 6 years. We have 33 peer-reviewed publications on our technology. After that's been proven, I think it's the right time for us to move over to benefit individual consumers at the consumer level. I think that's a harder thing to do, and it'll take a long time to do that, but I think it's critical to engage the consumer. You described pulling out two pieces of information, or you described pulling out the usual data, often known as claims data, and making that available. And I think that's important to do for applications. But pulling out hundreds of features for a patient can empower applications that let people manage their diabetes better or prevent hypertension or eat better. It lets the doctor and the patient engage much more meaningfully.
You know, I don't know if you're following this whole quantified self movement where a subset of the population is madly measuring all sorts of things about themselves and are starting to find new correlations. You know, there are people who have Crohn's disease that are, you know, tracking everything they eat. There are people with asthma who are, you know, tracking their symptoms and the weather patterns and their emotions and, you know, just a ton of stuff. And it's my feeling that something really good is going to come out of all of this in terms of brand new connections, brand new correlations of disease that we'd never thought of before when we were only tracking kind of traditional health, things that we traditionally think influence health. How do you think all of that stuff will play in with what you're doing in terms of ultimately painting a picture that of the health and wellness that's so much more granular than we have now?
It is such an exciting area. When I'm invited to speak, very often I'm speaking adjacent to an expert in quantified self. I'd like to think of myself as a bit of a novice. I started working in that space 12 years ago when I was at MIT, and MIT Media Lab was so focused on measuring what was going on in people's physiology, and actually that was my first product that I commercialized. I think that learning from the data that all of the different companies like Basis and Fitbit are getting and having the very high-end healthcare technologies like ours that can tie them to outcomes allows us to derive meaning from all that information. We don't know today what it means if a person's blood pressure goes up when they're at home cooking or if their heart rate goes up during certain types of exercise. We don't know what it means in terms of health outcome. We're only now getting information on what people's physiology is like from these kind of quantified self approaches. To link that to what a company like ours learns in terms of their process in the healthcare system and their outcomes, we can learn what this information means and how patients can change their behavior to live longer and healthier.
And it is fascinating. I agree with you. This is a great time in healthcare. I want to ask you about a company that you may or may not know about called Esmopolis. Have you heard of Esmopolis?
I haven't.
So this is a really interesting company that is able to put a GPS device into an asthma inhaler. And they're able to make some correlations about where people are and what they're doing at the time that they end up using their rescue inhalers. And they've done a project with, I think it's Louisville, where they were able to track, you know, use of rescue medications in people with asthma around the city. So then you can start saying, geez, everybody's using their inhaler when they go by 4th and Vine. Maybe we ought to go over to 4th and Vine and see what's there. And you go over there and there's a bunch of acacia trees in bloom or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. something that could be triggering the asthma. And it seems to me that along the lines of what you're trying to do with big data, that we can, start to put human beings into their whole environment and be able to make much more powerful health recommendations. Is this something you see tying into what Health Fidelity has on their roadmap?
I think that we all have to work together. So the answer is yes. Health Fidelity is very good at understanding how a patient looks, how they do in the healthcare system. Other groups are very good at understanding people's behaviors outside of the healthcare system. Google can track flu trends, or this company can track where asthma exacerbations are occurring. I think that the natural course of healthcare is to have these companies come together and learn from the large data sets they're acquiring to actually make a meaningful impact in healthcare in people's lives. I think that's been done in other IT fields over many years, and I think we're only beginning to see the tip of the iceberg in healthcare. The data is being collected in this decade, and the expectation is we better do something useful with it. I think that consumers, that patients are not going to tolerate innovative companies who only address sickness and only address the health system. We need to move toward working with these large data sets, addressing the patient's entire experience, and working toward wellness.
And so that's a really interesting thought. They do indeed need to come together, and Greg and I were just at Health Data Palooza, where there were lots of people who are doing big data things, but it wasn't, as far as I could tell, organized in a way where you could kind of get to this kernel that you're talking about of how does a Health Fidelity sit next to an Asthmopolis and come up with a way they could actually formally work together or share their data or at least share their insights. Are there convening bodies that are attempting to do that, bring you guys together?
So we were at Health Data Palooza also, and the fact that Health and Human Services is making this effort to create forums for innovative groups to come together, I think it's incredibly powerful. We've also seen Health 2.0 and other efforts by ONC create opportunities for groups to join together, be in the same place, and then from there it's often happenstance. It's the CEO of one company bumping into the CEO of another. We often know each other. Or it's people seeing something innovative and saying, hey, have you thought of working with that group? I would like to think that the young companies like ours, we're a Silicon Valley early stage company, are very open to partnerships. And in fact, we've developed partnerships with large firms and small firms this year. With that said, we need a test bed. We work in the large hospitals and health systems to assure what we're doing is useful. We don't want to try things and wonder whether they're effective. We're in healthcare. We measure. We like to see whether it's effective. We like to see whether it's benefiting people.
So do you think we need a National Institute of Health for Big Data?
I would like to see it. The National Institute of Health and the National Science Foundation are phenomenal organizations. We've been quite fortunate in that both have provided funding for us, as well as Silicon Valley Venture. We think that those organizations are large. They have a lot to think about. There are subsets of people in each that focus exclusively on healthcare and often on healthcare big data. I would love to see a group that focuses on that and has their own budget and can bring people together. I've talked with groups in Health and Human Services and Office of National Coordinator for Healthcare IT, and both have an interest in it and are considering it over the next couple of years.
That's great to hear. And I just want to stop and give a hat tip to HHS and ONC. I had an opportunity to talk with Farzad Mostashari when we were at Health Data Palooza, and a lot of us think that government and innovation, you know, those two words aren't often used in the same sentence unless it's to say that there's no correlation. But the work that HHS and ONC are doing to drive so many creative things like the blue button and like big data and, you know, all the work that they've done with meaningful use, I really feel like it's put us on a path of going so much faster than in terms of change and innovation in healthcare than we've gone over, I would say, my entire career.
It is an amazing difference. When I talk with the folks at ONC, which is the group within Health and Human Services focused exclusively on healthcare IT, when I talk with them, I'm shocked at how open and warm and welcoming they are, whether it's Farzad or his CMO, Jacob Ryder, always open and welcoming and always have multiple groups coming together. And it's one of the best examples of politics and policy going well. That's a group that was started by George Bush in 2005, was grown up over years, and as Obama came in, the focus of President Obama was to really assure that the group grew. And that has been a Republican and Democrat effort to make healthcare better. Very, very powerful group and shockingly warm, welcoming, and approachable.
Yeah, interesting. A great model for the rest of politics that isn't going quite so well. Pretty interesting stuff that's going on. I want to switch gears here a little bit and make this be a little more personal. So, Dan, you've got lots of letters after your name, MD, MBA, FACS, CEO, and co-founder of Health Fidelity. Can you tell us a little bit about your path? How did you go from doctor, not just doctor, but surgeon, to a big data guy?
Long path. Started as a computer geek, programming when I was 5 years old and selling software when I was 12 years old.
Selling software? I've got to stop you. Tell us what you did.
A five-year-old kid gets a video game system and figures out that you can actually write software with a keyboard. Can't really keep a kid away from that. And by the time I had the choice of making an allowance versus being paid by a law firm to do database software, there wasn't much of a comparison. So always loved it.
You were an entrepreneur as a kid.
I was. I always loved it. I always had technology in my heart. I also loved healthcare. Went through the formal training process, medical school, 9 years of residency and fellowship to become a surgeon and critical care doctor. And love both. I continue to love both.
Did you
the
practice?
Opportunity. I do. I practice a day a week. I'm on consulting faculty at Stanford, and I still teach operations and critical care.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Absolutely love it.
And then you went to business school?
I fit the different schools in the middle. Business school with a focus in bioinformatics. The challenge is for a young technologist, it's hard to break into healthcare. For a young doctor, it's hard to break into technology. For both, it's hard to innovate and assure that what you build gets out and used, understand funding environments and understand business models. I personally love school, obviously. I spent a lot of time in it. And the opportunity to do that, to be cross-disciplinary, is one of the most amazing parts of America. Schools are so open to that. So maybe I spent a little longer than I should have, but the opportunity now to run a company through the week, practice and teach a day a week on the weekend, and have young, brilliant Stanford minds that want to learn from someone who does cross disciplines like that is a phenomenal opportunity that I probably could not have created if I tried.
Well, you really are kind of a Renaissance man with bringing all of those skills to bear on what you're doing now. It's really fantastic. I want to ask you another question. I recently have had lots of people who've gone to medical school get in touch with me and tell me, hey, you know what, I really don't want to practice. I want to do something else. I don't recall seeing that when I was in training. Nobody would have dropped out of the program if they, mm-hmm. You know, voluntarily. Everybody wanted to be in practice. But it really seems different now. Are you seeing that at Stanford? And if so, what do you attribute it to? And do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, those are tough questions. I'm seeing the same thing. I think people come in very idealistic into healthcare. And I think people are a little disillusioned that the patient experience is non-ideal, that the costs are going up, that the reimbursement is going down. I think that healthcare is a tough field to practice full-time. My colleagues feel that practice of healthcare, and particularly practice of surgery, is a privilege, and I feel the same. I will not practice beyond the time that my outcomes are excellent. And I think that it's stressful. So I don't feel badly when young doctors come to me and say that they want to do something else. There are plenty of ways to use medical training to benefit humanity. I still prefer when I hear from a doctor that they love the field and want to do something else, because that tells me that they can embrace things they've done and integrate them. And that's so much of what the country needs for innovation, is people who enjoy different fields and have a passion and want to make the world better for patients, both at an individual level and at a population level. But I do think that it's tough out there, and I certainly don't blame people for being a bit disillusioned.
And how do you think it bodes for healthcare overall? You know, when I was in training, there people could do an MD with an MPH. There were no MD-MBA programs around. There were some MD-PhD programs. But now it seems increasingly medical schools are fostering kind of what you did on your own. Hey, come on in and get trained in this. And by the way, get trained in that, and you'll have a broader vision of the world, and then hopefully a broader reach in terms of who you can help. Are you seeing that across the country, or and what do you think about that?
Yeah, increasing trends toward doctors who understand business. I think there's a huge need for that, for doctors who have the patient in their heart to make the business of healthcare better, more financially viable, more efficient. When I went to business school more than a decade ago, it was hard. I was a young surgery resident, and when I told them I was going to get an MBA, they looked at me with shock and dismay. And
you're doing what?
it was inconceivable, and nowadays it wouldn't even raise an eyebrow. So I actually think that's a great trend in healthcare. We need doctors who understand business. We're well beyond the time when the doctors 20 or 30 years ago could say, I don't care what it costs, I just want to do what's right. Now we need to say, I want to do what's right, and I want to make sure that we are using money, that we are using the public's money often, in a fiscally responsible way.
Well, I can't tell you how refreshing it is to hear that. Probably 15 years ago, I was invited to give a talk at Stanford on exactly that topic, and it was a little bit too early for people to hear. But I think as healthcare costs have just exploded, as more people are uninsured, as more people agree that our current system is broken, this mantra of, yes, you've got to be the best clinician you can be, but you also are the shepherd of these scarce resources is increasingly important. So we're winding down here, Dan. This has been fabulous. Any last words you want to leave with our audience?
Well, first, I'd like to thank you for having me here. It was an absolute pleasure. And to the audience, I think be optimistic. People are working hard. People want to improve your experience. And we will do our best as Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, as physicians in the nation, as people who are fathers, mothers, and children. We will do our best to make the experience better and to give help where possible.
Very well said. That's going to have to be the last minute. We've been speaking with Dr. Dan Riskin, who is CEO, co-founder of Health Fidelity. Check him out on the web at healthfidelity.com. Also, follow them at Twitter, at Health Fidelity. I want to thank my guest, Pat, and join us tomorrow. We're going to talk to Dr. Rebecca Coelius of ONC. It's Greg Masters saying bye now. That was when I